It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did you at any point consider Matt Eberflus and his situation as you watched the Jets fire coach Robert Saleh? How about Eberflus, also a defensive guy, having a worse record than Saleh at 13-26? Is this story more about Aaron Rodgers better be a coach killer than Saleh being a bad head football coach?
Aaron Rodgers better as a coach killer than his coaches as a football coach. Aaron Rodgers is part of the problem here. There's no shadow of a doubt. Don't try to hug him. Look, I did think about Matt Eberflus strictly as a defensive guy who really needs his quarterback to play well, who cannot impact how well his quarterback plays. It's just a very difficult thing to do when you're not the offensive play caller. And it went through my head that, yeah, you know, what is Flusie's record? It's not very good. And if anything happened to his quarterback, I mean, we're sitting here, and I think we picked them to go 9-8, if I'm not mistaken, David, and I.
Yes, we both did.
We both kind of agreed on that.
Yep.
That's one game over 500, folks. That is not having, like, the greatest season. And again, it's a young team. It is a young quarterback. He's going to get better. We're watching him get better, and I feel like the Bears are headed in the right direction. But it is a hand-to-hand combat situation. You're in the NFL. It is hard to win, and they had a team that wasn't trying to win, and that's on his record. I don't think Flusie's running into that problem. I think he's out of the woods after a couple wins. But as he will tell you, it is week-to-week in the league. And it's hard to win, and when you don't win, they lose a game in London this week. We're going to be right back kind of talking about what the hell's going wrong, why aren't they winning. They need to keep winning, and then everything will take care of itself. I don't think – Matt Eberflus, though, at the end of this year, is still going to have a losing record. And in the next couple of years, if he wants to keep his job long term, and I believe he has that possibility, but you got to win. And you got to start, you got to win this year, just have a winning record, and then start making runs toward the playoffs. Then start being a good team. And I think it's a harder thing to do than you imagine. And I think that, you know, the idea that Robert Saleh, who is a really good defensive coordinator in San Francisco, the idea he gets called in and he's told basically, you know, you didn't do enough with Zach Wilson. That's basically what this is, isn't it? I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers and what's happening right now. But the reason he has a losing record is because of the quarterback he had.
I did not think about it, but I started to think about it after seeing this question submitted last night. And I think depending on how this year goes, you could fast forward 300 days or so, and this could be what's happening to Matt. I don't mind owners doing this at all. I mean, they have a very small window, if there is even a window anymore, with Aaron Rodgers. Something has to be done. I also heard the owner yesterday say, this is the most talented Jets roster since I've been the owner of the Jets. And we had to do something. Again, meaning that it's now or never. The Patriots are down. The Dolphins don't have their quarterback. It's you and the Bills in the AFC East. So it's now or never. I mean, I'm just surprised, though. This is what bothered me the most about this situation. It reminds me of Major League Baseball when you fire the manager and you elevate the manager's bench coach to be the new skipper of the team. You know, the defensive coordinator that's not even calling the plays is now the head coach. So he's the rah-rah guy. You know, and then there's also, he did not, in his opening press conference, commit to Nathaniel Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett might have his play calling duties stripped. One of the reports out of the New York papers was, as soon as the rumor was that Nathaniel Hackett was being stripped of his play calling duties, 5 minutes later, Woody Johnson and his brother went to Robert Saleh's office and confronted him, and he had to be escorted out by team security. Escorted out of the building. Get out. Never come back. See you, bye.
This is dysfunctional, it is impulsive, and it is on brand for the New York Jets. It's way too early to panic when you look at five games into a season with a 40-year-old quarterback. If you're going to do this and get rid of Robert Saleh and he wasn't the guy, you should have done it in the offseason. This isn't Major League Baseball, Dustin. This isn't a type of thing with a 162-game season where you can get a bounce and you have a new manager and a new culture and a new change. This is the NFL where it's much more difficult to pull that off. That's why there aren't in-season coaching changes. That's why it's been since 1976 since the Jets have made an in-season coaching change. That's when they said goodbye to Lou Holtz with one game remaining back in 1976. This is the only third time in their history they've done this. I do think also, while it's tempting to look at the Matt Eberflus comp because he's a defensive-minded head coach, I do think it's apples and oranges only because of this. We saw Matt Eberflus, I think, probably got involved after the Colts loss. Shane Waldron has called a different football game the last 2 weeks. I don't think it's an accident that it's been more in line with what the defensive-minded head coach might like, because this is a style of play that he favors. This is the identity they want. They want to play a little bit more of a run-oriented offense with a defense that can get you takeaways and sacks and field position. So Matt Eberflus intervened in the way that maybe Robert Saleh wasn't allowed to. If that makes Aaron Rodgers a coach killer, I think that fits. Would anybody be surprised if Aaron Rodgers added coach killer to the list of things that we have called him over the last several years? So I don't see the comp with the Bears necessarily. It could be in a year from now. Let's hope not, because I don't want Caleb Williams to develop into that kind of a diva that is getting coaches fired. But I think the Jets situation, to me, is an isolated one. It's a product of the New York environment. It's a product of the dysfunction of Woody Johnson and how impulsive he has become.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
That's one of those questions. You know how hard that is to answer.
Can't wait to hear from that guy Saturday after his team goes out to Oregon. See how that goes for Mr. Day.
Oh.
The Bears have had 48 offensive line combinations in Matt Eberflus's 39 games. This was from Mark Potash. How do you suspect the O-line will look to start Sunday's game? And how tempting will it be for the Bears to use the bye week following this game as the reason to buy another week of rest and recovery for banged up guys like Tevin Jenkins and Larry Borum?
I really would look at that as an opportunity, because you want to have some stability that you don't currently have. Tevin Jenkins, his biggest problem, it bears repeating because it continues to be the story. He can't get a long-term contract because he can't stay on the field. And if you bring him back too soon, even though he may think that he is ready, I think an extra week might benefit him, because one becomes two. You have the schedule is in your favor. Bill Murray has been acceptable. He graded out well, according to PFF, if you trust that. I don't know, but on tape, he didn't get exposed. And so if you have options with Matt Pryor, who's become more valuable than you ever imagined he would have to be, but he is your right guard. Maybe Bill Murray is your left guard. You've got some depth behind them in Nate Davis. Remember him. And I don't know where Borum fits in, what kind of shape he would be in. Tevin Jenkins might benefit from another week. Even if he feels like he's ready to go, maybe he will try to go. But you don't have to make him go, because you can rest him and get him ready to go when you come back after the bye. So I would think that it would be Braxton Jones, Bill Murray, Coleman Shelton, Matt Pryor, and then obviously Darnell Wright.
Well, if Bill Murray is starting this game, the Bears are going to lose. I'm just saying.
Wow.
You got to get Tevin Jenkins out there.
Wow.
This is a game this is one of the games that you marked, you should have marked, that you need to win as an organization. You want that win going into the bye week. Get your rest on the bye. If he gets hurt in the game, then bring in Bill Murray, I guess. Okay? But not now. And I need a little clarity. So 48 offensive line combination. So this is anytime like a guy like goes in and out of a game because of an injury, I'm guessing, is part of this number.
I'm sure Potsy has done the research.
I'm just saying, that just seems like a crazy. I mean,
it's crazy.
48 out of 39. That's wild. That's absolutely wild. I mean, maybe I'm selling Bill Murray short. Maybe I am. But you know who the second ranked offensive guard for the Bears was after Bill Murray and PFF? Tevin Jenkins. Okay, so I'm just saying, if you want to trust the numbers, the Bears need to win this game. Tevin Jenkins needs to be there for Tevin Jenkins and for the Bears on Sunday morning.
You know, here's I don't argue with the idea that Jenkins needs to play to prove he can play and that he can stay upright, etc. But I think you're underselling Bill Murray and what he managed to do. Bill Murray came into the league as a defensive player, and they moved him to offense after I think he spent 2 years in the league. I thought you would love a guy like this, his story, Dustin. And if you watched him at all after the game and went back and looked at, he played offensive line like a defensive player. He maintained a lot of that aggressiveness. He was trying to put a hat on someone. He was trying to win a physical battle. He was their top ranked player in run blocking, according to PFF, and he was second in pass blocking. So that's pretty good for a guy who's forced into action. It means he's been waiting and he wants to play and he's playing aggressively. I have no problem if Bill Murray has to start the game. I thought that I thought he did very well for himself in the limited time I saw, and I recall Flusie bringing him up in the preseason. He brought him up. You know, out of nowhere during one practice, Bill Murray's doing a real good job.
He had a good camp.
So I think that's you know, give me guys that really want to play and want to be out there and want to have an aggressive attitude about doing that. I think that I just don't know. I don't know how you're lining up all your backups if all your backups are playing, right? I don't know what you have to do. At what point would you actually have to play Nate Davis, I guess, is the question, because he's still healthy, so you would think at some level you might actually need him. You know, to me, it's real simple. If a guy can play, you let him play. If you deem that Ryan Bates is healthy and ready to come back, you bring him back. And I don't believe in this idea of, oh, you know, you get 3 weeks off if you don't play him this week. I don't believe that at all. I think that, you know, players play, and the goal is to get guys back on the field as fast as they can. And if a guy is going to take a flight to London, he may as well line up if he's able to do so. So I wouldn't worry about whether, well, he's got a rib and an ankle. You know, it would be wiser to not have him leave with a knee. I would put the guy out there and let him play, and if he can't play, I'd put someone else out there.
That question remains.
What was your biggest takeaway from the Blackhawks season opener in Utah? Do you believe the team around Connor Bedard is significantly better this season? Did the NHL approve expansion to Utah in part because it's one of the rare places where fans don't know how to respond to Commissioner Gary Bettman, who was politely cheered as part of a pregame fan event?
One of my favorite ever moments at a Super Bowl is when we went to that hockey game in New York, David. We had about 19 guys from Chicago, and we were just talking about Gary Bettman and how I was telling a story about how I was at a Blackhawks game and they tried to like introduce the assistant equipment manager and Gary Bettman, and then they introduced another guy, and all of a sudden the people like kind of, hey, wait, is that Bettman? Boo! And the whole crowd started booing. And so we were all laughing. And then Gary shows up in our booth.
He was very nice that night.
He was lovely.
Yeah.
And we were like, hey, get a photo with the Chicago guys. So we all got around him. And Bob Vassilopoulos is going to take the photo. And he was taking his, like, he just couldn't, he had a little issue with his camera. And Bettman's like, Bettman said, come on, boo, boo. He started booing Bob, taking too long with the photo, and all of us, the photo was one of the great photos because we're all laughing our rear ends off. Everyone was having a big laugh.
It was a good time.
It was a great night, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a great moment. And so whenever I see Gary, I think of that moment, and I think he's in on the joke. He knows everyone boos him no matter what he says, where he goes. So it was weird to just see him received well in Utah. As far as the team being better, I believe that. I don't know if that's going to be reflected in the record. I think it's going to take them some time to get up and running. And it seems as if, and we'll talk to Chelly later, but it seems like their defense isn't really up to snuff yet.
I hate that the Blackhawks are part of the Western Conference. I hate that the first game of the season had a 9 p.m. puck drop. I hate that the first game of the season was on the four-letter network and not available, because I do have, you know, I'm all excited. I do have the new Chicago Sports Channel. I was able to watch the Bulls last night. Got a lot of people texting, complaining, Xfinity users complaining about the fact that they couldn't watch the game. Well, you could listen to the game right here on the Score. You know, is the team a better around Bedard? I think so, but it's better offensively. Are they going to be able to outscore teams? I'll be interested to hear our guy here, Brandon Fryer, tell us whether or not we should be betting the over. I think a good parlay when the Blackhawks and Bulls play is to bet the over on both of their games. That would be like a fun little trend to follow. When they both play on the same night, we should like maybe do like a show bet. Just invest like a $2 two-team parlay on both overs, because I don't think either team knows how to play defense.
Well, I think you saw that reflected in the way Luke Richardson was mixing and matching defensive pairings last night in the first game. It reflected also just the trial and error. There's going to be a lot of different combinations, a lot of new talent, a lot of new players. The Hawks are deeper and more experienced than they were a year ago. But the thing about hockey, like any sport, but I think especially hockey, you got four lines, you got all sorts of different combinations, all different kind of chemistry that you try to achieve. It's hard to compress that into a training camp, especially early in the season, and you're trying to get the best out of Connor Bedard, and he certainly gets the best out of everybody who plays around him. He had two assists last night. They only scored two goals. So everything is about 98. But you have to give us a little bit more time, and I think that's the problem. The other issue is that they play 10 of the first 15 games on the road. So for a team trying to figure out how everyone fits together, both on the defensive pairings and on the, you know, the first three or four lines, then that's going to be difficult. So not making excuses, but I think that, yes, you can say they're definitely more talented. They're definitely going to be better in theory on paper, but trying to get this all to come together like hockey teams, good hockey teams do, it may take a while before you start to see some real results and a benefit from all the experience you paid for and got. If you're Kyle Davidson, you're getting a little impatient because the preseason was awful. Awful. excuse me. But you want more results.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
What did you make of the Bulls preseason opener? Did you shrug at the word that Lonzo Ball wasn't going to play in this one? Any thoughts on this team?
Yeah, I wasn't as excited as you were, Mully. I think that a couple things that were easy positives. Bezelis, yes. The way that they came back, definitely. Io liked a lot.
Mm.
I didn't like the way that they played defense, and I didn't like the way they shot from three-point range. And those are the two big things that you're going to look for in preseason for cues. And defensively and three-point range, they still look like they're not where they need to be. And I have a hard time envisioning them getting better necessarily because they still don't have that kind of roster. But there were some bright spots. I liked the way they came back. You know, I liked Josh Giddey. I have to say that. Josh Giddey was impressive as well. So there were some good things. First preseason game, a lot of mistakes, kind of sloppy. But overall, yeah, I think you have to be happy with the victory, the way they came back. But I'm really excited about how Bezelis fits into the rotation.
Yeah, a win's a win. And Coby White looked like he was in nice form. And he's going to have to continue to grow if the Bulls are going to win 30 to 40 games like most of us are thinking. Bezelis looked good. I mean, yeah, guy's a bundle of energy, right? You'd love to have some of that, the energy that kid had on the court. So I like that. There was effort. Giddey, it was great that he played. And I was disappointed. I'll raise my hand. I was disappointed to not see Ball out there. I mean, what are we waiting for? What are we doing?
Lonzo Ball?
Right. He's practicing. Put him out, even if it's five minutes. Have him break a sweat.
He's got COVID.
He's got COVID. He had a setback. Tested positive for COVID.
Oh boy. Well, I guess then maybe you should put him on IR, and we should just maybe we'll see him in 2025. Maybe we'll see him in 2025. He had COVID.
Get the whole team sick.
His conditioning is affected. I can tell you, when you get COVID, everybody can relate to that. You're knocked back. If you're a casual jogger or an NBA player, you're knocked back. Your conditioning is affected.
You just coughed. Do you have COVID, David?
Wow. I coughed. I got choked up talking about the Hawks.
You need to be excused?
Oh, man.
Okay, let's just hear from him in 2025. He got COVID.
What? is going on in the world? Look, you know, here's the reality. The reality is that, you know, DeMar DeRozan is gone. Alex Caruso is gone. It's a different Bulls team. I think we knew that going in. Let's be careful now about saying that I didn't notice they can't hit a three-pointer and they're not a great defensive team. I saw them do what they said they were going to do, which is run the floor. Giddey was running the floor. There were guys following to the rim. I liked that. I liked seeing Matas Bezelis. He played well.
You're Giddey.
And it was fun to see.
Giddey.
I enjoyed that game because it was different. The Bulls are different, and they look different. And they came back in the game, and they won. I am not predicting great things for the Bulls, and I never claimed they were going to make I understand what the realities of this season are. I said that for a night, I really enjoyed watching them run up and down the floor. That's all I said. Let's calm down about how much
I'm calm. I'm very calm.
Enthusiastic about the
I'm
Bulls.
I'm very calm.
I mean, I'm not Dustin. At least I'm paying attention.
Did he had COVID? That was the reason?
That's why he didn't play.
Okay, we'll see if he plays Saturday night or what's the protocol now. What's the government say? What's the rules now about COVID?
Not quite sure.
I think you try to.
Well, some people had it. Some people had it memorized.
You try to steer clear.
So I want to know what I want to know.
If he plays Saturday night with a mask, we'll know.
Mask on his knee.
That's a great question.
All right, what's your takeaway from Game 3 results in the National League Divisional Series? Do you consider the Mets an underdog, given that they have the second highest payroll in the sport at just over $342 million? The Dodgers, the only team higher, $357 million. Why do the Padres dislike them so much?
It's like a big brother thing, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of, I'm sure the Padres and the Dodgers are too close to each other to like each other. I'm sure the attention that the Dodgers have gotten this year is rubbed the Padres the wrong way. I like the Padres, the fact that they're going for it. And of course, there is the idea that that they didn't want Manny Machado and they traded him and all that. So, yeah, there's reasons not to like a team. But I think it's amusing to me that the Mets are considered this great underdog story. And I understand that they did come from nowhere, and they did figure out a way. They had an unbelievable ending to the season. They had all the travel. They had to go to Atlanta. They won a game, and it was miraculous the way that they won to get in to begin with. And you know, they split a doubleheader, and they got into the playoffs, and they went to Milwaukee, and they eliminated Milwaukee. And I understand everything that happened, but it is amusing to me that we are they have somehow become these miracle Mets, these darlings, but because they are a very, you know, the payroll is ridiculous, and they've got like a lot of really well played players that are performing pretty well right now. So that's good to see. And I've always been a big Frankie Lindor fan. I think he's a great player. So I'm enjoying that. I love the idea that now we have a couple of elimination games, because all it means is that if the team's in danger of being eliminated win, then everybody's going to be eliminated. And I love that kind of thing.
I'm hoping both these series end up to game fives is what I'm hoping. The fan in me, that's what I would like to see. I'd like to see the do or die aspect of this. I don't want to see David and I's World Series pick eliminated later today. I don't want the Phillies to be gone.
I kind of do. I'm okay with that.
Mm.
I know I picked them, but I like these stories. I say go Mets, go Padres. I want the NLCS to be a matchup between two teams that played their way into that spot. I'm sick of the Dodgers. I know Ohtani is a hard guy to say anything bad. I'm not. This has nothing to do with Ohtani, but I'm sick of the Dodgers being there. I'm sick of them spending all the money. You know, Phillies, yeah, Schwarber, every time you see Schwarber, you're like, why isn't he in Chicago? So I'm good with the Phillies going home. Even though I picked them to win, I would like to see the Mets, who are remarkable. I know I'll stop saying miracle Mets, but they are remarkable based on where they came from in the standings as much as their payroll, because it is a remarkable story. So it's easy to dislike the Dodgers. It's easy to get behind the Padres. They have Dylan Cease on the mound today. It would be a great moment. I'd be happy for a guy that deserves that kind of success. Yes, he is an ex-White Sox pitcher. It was not his fault. They had to unload him, and they got bad enough they needed to bottom out. Dylan Cease winning today to clinch the series and eliminate the Dodgers. Fantastic moment in a season that started when he was still way back in the Camelback Ranch getting traded to the Padres.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. 725. 725 is Biggs' time this morning. The Reds wasted no time in replacing their skipper, David Bell, by introducing Terry Francona on Monday. Why are the White Sox being so deliberate? Has your short list changed, and does it really matter?
Well, I don't think it matters necessarily, because the thing about the White Sox is about talent, not the manager. The manager will have to establish a culture. It's a tough job, and I don't think that it's going to be an easy job. My short list is Skip Schumacher, David Bell, and David Ross. If I were interviewing candidates, that would be my first three candidates. Somebody who has done the job before. I know that there's going to be a candidate emerge who doesn't have any major league managing experience, who will come highly regarded with a great reputation from a winning organization, and we'll all sit and wait and see how he manages the clubhouse and manages his lineups and all those things. But I know in Schumacher, David Bell, and David Ross, guys who have done it before and had success, that's where I think you start.
It's a good list, David. I like your list. I would add, and I did this a while back, I would add Willie Harris as a guy that they should definitely talk to. I mean, he played for the team. It's also kind of juices up things a little bit. There'd be a little bit of a buzz with the Cubs and White Sox fans. But, I mean, no. Until the roster gets better, does it matter? I think it could. I think you could have a leader. That's why I think... What about that is it the Birmingham Barons that won the Southern League?
Yeah.
What about
Sergio Santos?
What about him? I know that's cheap, but I mean that he knows these guys. And we joke around about it. We've talked like who would want that job. John Heyman's come on. He didn't said who would want that job, but he said it's gonna be a tough sell. Here's a guy that wants the job. He wants the job, says it would be an honor to be the skipper of the White Sox. That's gotta mean something to somebody, I would think.
My suspicion is that the reason that that the Reds went after Tito and hired him is because they are hoping to win, and they want to win immediately. And I think with the White Sox, they are being deliberate because maybe they're playing a game of musical chairs. Maybe they're waiting for whoever is going to get paid to take whatever job is available to them, and then they can pick up whoever the best manager is that will come cheap. And I think that that's kind of one of their priorities, is to not spend a lot of money, whether it's on free agents or on managers or whatever it might be. I think if Buck Showalter showed any interest in wanting to be the manager of the White Sox, the guy, it's like he's been a manager of the year repeatedly. Why wouldn't you bring the guy in and talk to him? Why wouldn't you want to know what his ideas are? Why wouldn't you go outside your limited small time frame and expand it and let people tell you what's wrong with your team and maybe take some notes and use that information that they have determined from watching as a methodology of hiring the right guy for the job? Well, what do you think about this? Have you noticed this? That sort of thing. I worry that it's amateur hour on the South Side, and that you got people that really don't have a great depth of knowledge about what they're doing, or their knowledge is from, decades ago, and things have changed quite a bit. So I would have no problem. I would like to hear that they're interviewing people, and I would like to know that they have expanded outside the organization and that they are trying to learn something from the people that they're talking to about their job. But I got to imagine that there are a lot of people that don't want this job, that would prefer other jobs. And so maybe you have to wait and see who's the best candidate that lands in your wheelhouse.
Hmm.